You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, Don, I, a bit like you, had no interest in the America's Cup until I saw the two boats that are sailing off for it. They've eliminated the British boat, the United Kingdom boat, the one from England, and they've eliminated, strangely enough, the American boat, called the America's Cup, but they're not in it. They've been eliminated. And the Italian boat, which is called Luna Rossa Prada Pirelli or whatever, it is sailing off against the Emirates New Zealand boat because New Zealand hold the America's Cup, and it's being sailed in New Zealand at a harbour called Waitemata Harbour, and it is fascinating. And I thought we might ask someone who knows a bit about it, seeing as I couldn't get much information from the Foxtel broadcast that was going on. So we're going to get on the line now a man called Grant Warrington, who is better known for his Sydney to Hobart escapades with Wild Thing. And I think we might find it fascinating just what sort of money's involved. And here we go. We're going to see if Grant will take our call. Don. We're dialing him now. Did you know $2,000 billion is spent annually on boating around the world? Is that Grant?
It is, Sam. Good morning.
Thank you very much for taking the call. Now, I'm here with Don Scott. Say hello to Grant Warrington, Don.
Grant, how are you?
Good morning, Don. Very well. Thanks
so
very much.
Thank you very much for joining us. Before I introduce or just mention who you are, maybe you could tell us just your background. I know about the Sydney to Hobart and Wild Thing and all that. And are you 38? Is that all you are?
I wish, Sam. No, I was 38 when I launched Scandia, as it was called then. That was our sponsor's name. So
that's in 2000.
In 2003. So I was definitely the youngest owner of a 100-foot canting keel yacht in the world, and probably still am. The only one stupid enough to spend all my money on a boat of that size. But anyway,
so you will find, Grant, that this is you'll find that two dumb footballers like Don and I have suddenly become involved and fascinated by what's going on in New Zealand. It's very topical we talk to you because as we speak live now, I don't think it has been decided because we had a lay day yesterday because of the wind. Where are we up to? Just give us a rundown on that, please.
Well, it is very exciting. Unfortunately for the Italians, well, this the first boat to win seven races wins the America's Cup. Now, it was 1-all, 2-all, 3-all,
yep.
And then unfortunately for the Italians, the Kiwis won two races and got to 5-3. And then yesterday, they had a little brain fade and let their opposition go out on their own. A little wind shift to the right got the Kiwis their sixth win. So
I saw
6-3, unfortunately. And today, highly likely that it'll be the America's Cup win to the Kiwis because there's two races. But they only need one to win, and the Kiwis need four. The Italians need four.
So Grant, as we speak, while we're speaking to you, maybe it will be decided. Would that be the realms of possibility or not, or hasn't it been?
Not quite. So midday or 12, about between 12 and 1 is the start over there in New Zealand. Midday our time, because they're a few hours ahead. So they start in the afternoon. It's sort of set up around TV, right?
So there's so many things I would like to ask you. Don would like to ask you something.
What fascinates me, Grant, is it was an established thing, the America's Cup in America. How did New Zealand become a power that it is now in, 12-metre sailing?
Well, so back in the day, of course, 12 metres were around for a lot of years. And, of course, we'll all remember when Alan Bond and our great Melbourne man John Bertrand at the helm won the America's Cup in 1983 for Australia. And since then, there's been various different winners. So the Americans won it back, and the Swiss won it, and the Kiwis have won it, and so it's gone around about anyway. The Kiwis won it, won the last cup in 17 in Bermuda in catamarans, foiling catamarans. So then they came up with this new boat, this AC-75, because everyone wanted to get back to sailing monohulls rather than catamarans. So they came up with a foiling monohull of all things, which is just the most incredible piece of equipment. So if you have had the opportunity to see the races, it's just unbelievably exciting to watch. And
it is.
These boats are doing the same speed that you do down the freeway. It's unbelievable. 50
but
knots
but is, hasn't there got to be a consistency? What type of boat are you actually racing? I thought it was 12-metre boat.
I think there's 72.
No. What I'm trying to get at, you know, they've changed dramatically the design, but is there a consistency with this so-called thing called a 12-metre yacht? Is it the sail coverage, the area of the sail, the length, or the what consistency is it with the old boats that used to sail?
None.
So the 12-metre rule was just a measurement rule. In fact, the boats were
for
about
what?
65
what?
To 75, not of length. It was a very involved calculation to come up with this rule. The boats were actually about 65 to 70 feet long, but there was a whole bunch of calculations of sail area and boat displacement and all sorts of different things derive this 12-metre rule. But what happens, the beauty of the America's Cup is when you win it, you get to choose what kind of boat you want to sail in the next event.
Oh.
So you can change the design, and obviously you get together with the first person that wants to challenge you, which is called the challenger of record, and then together you work out what sort of boat you want to race in the next event, and by negotiation you come up with, you know, obviously technology evolves and people want to, you know, it needs to be the Formula One of sailing, so they want to have the latest and fastest and most exciting boat for people to see. So this is where we're at today with these amazing flying machines.
So would it have started with Ben Lexon or the Australian Challenge with the wing keel? This technology or thinking outside the square?
Yeah, look, thinking outside the square certainly was Ben Lexon when the wing keel happened in 1983 and everyone was stunned and you know, there was a bit of mystery about it all because they kept the boat shielded when it had come out of the water every night. It was behind all these curtains and things, and that was sort of a bit of a mind game with the opposition. They didn't know what was there. And it's all part of the cloak and dagger of the America's Cup.
So Grant, this will not ever see the end of traditional racing like you've been involved in, the Sydney to Hobart ocean racing, because these boats... This is a pretty contrived event as far as you can only sail with high winds and very smooth seas on these foils, can't you, really?
That's right, Sam, yes. The seas need to be relatively smooth because what happens is when the foils, and you see they've got T-foil, so you've got a rudder and that's got a T-foil on the bottom of it with another little trim tab, which is exactly the same as the wing on an aeroplane with the flaps on the back, and then you've got these canting arms in the middle of the boat, which again have T-foils with trim tabs on them. If any of those components become airborne, the boat takes off like we saw that huge crash with American Magic. The boat just launches into the air and smashes down to the ground, or down to the sea surface.
Yep.
And, you know, it does enormous damage. So it's they are sailing around the world currently in 60-footers, which are sort of semi-foiling. So they're getting the bow up and the sort of middle of the boat elevated. But to be fully foiling is another whole world of technology and problems and danger. And, you know, maybe one day we'll see it. Maybe we'll have deep enough foils with T foils that are, you know, meters below the seabed, the sea surface, sorry. So they can remain in stable flight with the hull out of the water. But we've still got a fair way to go because, of course, it's all very well to capsize an America's Cup boat in flat water when your shore crew and all your chase boats are around you. But to do it hundreds of miles offshore, you need to be able to get up, dust yourself off and continue on. And that requires, you know, lead in a keel and, you know, all sorts of other components, which you can make the boat heavier, it doesn't want to fly as well. So then you need bigger sails. So you go around these design loops to try and make the boat perform and fly and do all these amazing things. But there are constraints when you need to come home at night.
So Grant Warrington, the midfoils are powered by batteries, are they not? Or some mechanical, which seems to have got right away from man versus, or woman, or person versus the wind and the elements. Now we have absolutely software and technical excellence to the, as you said, Formula One specifications of motor racing. It just seems extraordinary that we've got battery-operated things that make the boat lift out of the water.
Yeah, that's right. So to change the keel, the canting position of these mid-arms, they have hydraulic rams with an electric power pack, because if they had enough men to be able to grind the grinders to create enough oil pressure for those systems to work, they'd need 30 blokes on handles to get enough pressure. So they said, no, we want to keep the crew numbers to about 11. We don't want to have more than about 6 grinders. So that kind of limited the amount of oil flow that was available that man could push. So they said, okay, we'll draw a line and we'll say you can hydraulically and battery pack operate the keel canting arms, but everything else has to be done manually. So the sails are still trimmed manually, but they're through it. Sorry.
So will you say they're trimmed to the novice, to the uninitiated? Just watching those boats, the sails never seem to move, either going into the wind, downwind, or into the wind. I can't detect them actually moving at all. They're just static sails, are they not?
It's very, very subtle, Sam. So because they are travelling so quickly, 50 knots, you know, nearly 100 kilometres an hour, the sails are extremely flat. So you hardly notice when they tack or jibe from one tack to another, the sails literally kind of flop onto the opposite side, but they're hardly moving. So it's not like the old days when the thing flaps backwards and forwards and you have to sheet it in. They still are sheeted around winches, so they still have it, like the jib sheet still goes down around a winch and you pull it on and you let it off. But you're only moving that rope by very, very small amounts.
So Grant, I mentioned, you might have heard me just say, it says there's $2,000 billion, with a B, dollars spent per year on yachting and boating around the world. Why didn't Australia have a foil, or is it too expensive? What is the cost involved in getting one of these rigs onto the water and all the research and development of it?
Yeah, it's a good question, Sam. It's very sad that, you know, we've got our best Australian sailors, one on each of the two boats, Jim Spithill skippering the Prada boat and Glenn Ashby on Team New Zealand, both very passionate Australians and both at the absolute top of their sport. It's a lot of money. It's $100 million to run a campaign. You know, they say the Poms might have spent £100 million, believe it or not. So enormous budget, and there's definitely plenty of people that can afford to do that in Australia, but there's just not enough interest in the sport, unfortunately, even though we've won it in the past. And, you know, Bondi obviously spent millions back in, 1983, but there's just not enough support. Government support probably as well. Team New Zealand are funded hugely by the government as well.
Did I understand you to say that the two boats that are contesting the America's Cup at the minute are captained by Australians? That seems to be an absolute contradiction in terms.
Yeah, it does. Well, so Jim Spithill is the starboard helmsman on Prada Pirelli. So they have a skipper on each side of the boat. You'll see when they tack, some boats people run from one side to the other and other boats they don't. So Jim Spithill is the starboard starting helmsman and the starboard driving the starboard helmsman. And Francesco Bruni, who's the Italian skier, steers the port side. The Kiwi boat, the actual helmsman is Peter Burling, but very, very closely with Glenn Ashby, who's Australian. Yes, so Glenn steers the boat through the tacks and does all the pre-start. So he, in the last cup, he was known as, one was the skipper, one was the helmsman. Glenn Ashby was actually the skipper and Peter Burling was the helmsman. Now they've kind of changed the wording a bit. But essentially, if you talk about the number one person in charge of the boat driving it, you would say, yes, it's fair to say that there's an Aussie on both boats in that role.
Now, these helmsmen or crew, are they professional? Is this what they do?
Absolutely. You know, very, very well paid. Like any sport, at the top of their game, they're very well paid. I would say the grinders, hugely strong athletes. They're probably on 200, 250,000 a year, somewhere in that order. Right up to, there's talk that the skippers are well over $1 million a year in their salary packages. So
are their skills, are they transferable from one class of yacht to another?
Absolutely.
So do America's Cup here, just for example, and when the Sydney Hobart's on, they come across, the crew comes across and cruise one of the yachts in the Sydney Hobart. Is that how it works?
Well, it does. Peter Burling, for example, won a gold medal in the last Olympics in the 49er class, which is a boat that you've also heard Nathan Outeridge on the commentary when you watch it on the TV. So Nathan's an Australian who also won a gold medal in the 49er class. It's like an 18-foot skiff, but sailed by two people. So Peter Burling, certainly very good sailor. And Glenn Ashby has won more than 10 world championships and in various different classes. So very highly skilled guys. They would get onto, Volvo boats and sail around the world in the Volvo Ocean Race, for example, or any other type of boat. Yeah, very transferable skills.
So we spoke about putting curtains around the wing keel back in 1983. I've got a feeling that would pale into insignificance about the security and the guarding of any secrets about these boats. The security contingent around these boats would probably be millions of dollars to protect their interests.
Oh, absolutely. And also the IP, everything's electronic these days. So, yeah, there's people out in chase boats with enormous lenses taking photos of boats while they were training, and people on cliff tops. And, back in the day, you'd remember they used to send divers down to try and take, underwater photos of keels and things. Today, they have to lift them out. I'm pretty sure they've got a rule where they're not allowed to put skirts around the keels when they lift them out of the water each night, just to try and reduce the cost and make it semi-transparent, but there's still plenty of skullduggery that goes on, and it's all part of the mystique of the America's Cup.
And are these boats manufactured in their country of origin, or do they come out in kit form and constructed on site?
Well, yeah, so the hulls have to be manufactured in the country of origin. Some people would love to see a nationality rule where all of the sailors and all of the equipment is made in your own country. But what they had to do to try and get everybody close to being in the same page within enough time frame, because the Kiwis really run the race here with this new development of the new class, they said, okay, the mast is going to be the same for everybody, and the canting keel, the arms that go out the side of the boat, and the hydraulic system is all going to be supplied equipment, so everybody's got the identical parts. But the hulls you can do what you like with, the rudders you can do what you like with, and the tiffoils and the controlling mechanism for adjusting the trim tabs, that you do what you like. So that gives each team a degree of flexibility to develop their design.
Now, Grant, just finally, we haven't spoken about you really as a sailor. You have a new campaign, I think, do you not, for the Sydney to Hobart, which I think wasn't run this year because of the COVID. Where are you up to with that? And could I ask you this? Were you part of the race, I should know this, but were you part of the race in that 1998 when the perfect storm enveloped the competition? Were you part of that in any way? I should know that.
Yes, I was, Sam. Yes, I was out there that year. We had a new boat and we didn't make the finish line. We were listening to all the tragic stories on the radio while we were motoring back into Eden. We'd split our mast. We could hear all the mayday calls, and it was a terrible event. As time goes on, I did the Volvo race from Melbourne to Hong Kong, the Melbourne to Hong Kong leg, which was in the last Volvo race, on a boat called Scallywag, which was a bit of fun. We won that leg, which was great. And now we've got a boat which is actually called Stefan Racing. So my mate Stefan, the hairdresser from Queensland, who's fantastic fellow.
He runs those big speedboats, doesn't he?
He did race records across Bass Strait and all sorts of things, and won Australian championships back in the day. I think 2002 was the last one that he won. But he's also got 38 hairdressing salons in Queensland, and employs over 500 people. He's a very very interesting fellow. So he's sponsoring us now. So the boat's pink with rainbows on it and all sorts of interesting branding. The boat's called Stefan Racing, and we're about to, I think, Good Friday, we do the Brisbane to Gladstone yacht race, and then Hamilton Island race week later in the year, and then back down to Sydney to Hobart. So looking forward to this year.
So what about, if I can go back in a little bit of history, Scandia and Wild Thing were the same boats, though just rebadged, is that right?
Well, there was different boats. I had, when Scandia was launched, the boat was called Wild Thing. That was actually sponsored by Scandia. So we would enter. So the sponsors got their pound of flesh. You know, we would always enter as the sponsor's name. Scandia won the Sydney to Hobart race in 2003 with the great man Gerard Healy on board, the only man to have won a Sydney to Hobart race and a Brownlow medal. There you go.
And also,
I was going to say, could Don, we wouldn't like some pensioners to come on your next race just for the interest's sake, would you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Get on it, Sam. Get on it, boys.
Now, hang on, listen, I'll just blow your bags a little bit. Was it Wild Oats that you sailed from Sydney to Osaka, and it was a two-man crew, you and another fellow, and you won that race? That's a 100-footer. The two men sailed from Sydney to Osaka. Is that right?
No, so that was back in 1995. That was an earlier Wild Thing. It was a 50-footer, so it was a smaller boat. So that was 1995. I did that race with a guy by the name of Scott Gilbert, and we won the race, broke the record, got awarded the keys to the city of Melbourne. Couldn't find what they opened, but did get the keys to the city, and that record stood until last year, in fact. It's been a long record, and it was broken by a larger boat from Sydney.
Well, Grant, we really appreciate you dotting the I's and crossing the T's a little for this. And if I could encourage anyone who is not interested just to have a look at these boats in operation.
Could I ask one question before you sum up? Because this fascinated me. Can I just one question? I sat on the cliffs of Mornington when that round the world boat race came to Melbourne. Do you remember that?
I do.
I was absolutely astonished at the size of the sails and the boats in that particular race. And what I question, how do you anchor a mast so big to a boat that size? Is it done or attached to the keel, or the lead weight in the keel, or whatever is in the keel to keep the thing stable?
Yeah, look, it's a very interesting question. The mast made out of carbon fibre, and the rigging is made out of carbon fibre. So the structure of the boat, the bottom of the boat, is enormously strong, and you put the mast in the boat, connect up all the cables that hold it vertical, and you have a hydraulic jack underneath the bottom of the mast, and you pump it up vertically to pre-tension all of those cables, and you have sort of in the order of 30 or 40 tons of vertical pressure under the mast, and that's what tensions all the cables, and then the cables keep the mast vertical. Well,
what do you attach?
They fall down.
Yeah, well, what do you attach the bottom of the mast to?
The bottom of the mast just sits in like a bracket that supports it to stop it sliding around, and it's also supported at the deck.
Now, if those boats couldn't get under the Balti Bridge and just got under the Westgate Bridge, as I understand it, they were so big.
That's right. Yeah, I think we had to
tilt them.
That's right. For memory, the West Gate Bridge is about 53 metres underneath. I think our mast height was about 32 or 3, and I think the Balti Bridge is about 28.
Yep, yep. So
we had to put 500 kilo water bags out from the mast and lean them over and get them under.
Now, Grant, thank you very much for joining us. It's fascinating. As I say, we don't know. I presume that the New Zealanders are going to wrap this up today. Why do you say that?
Look, 2013, James Spithill was skippering a boat for America called Oracle, and they were 8-0 down. They hadn't won a race. The Kiwis had won 8 races. And it was the 1st to 9, right? And there was a press conference after the 8th race. And the interviewer said to James Spithill, "James, can you win the America's Cup from here?" And he very famously said, "Well, I think the question should be, can they lose it?"
Fantastic.
And then he came out and he won 9 races straight. So
anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Anything can happen. Every single night they're back adjusting the boat, doing micro little adjustments and improvements, and the boat just got faster and faster and faster. Now, that's probably happening today, last night, every night. But yesterday we did see an incredibly fast New Zealand boat in the first race. And I just think it's going to be a battle for James. I hope he can win 2 races today and keep the event alive. But I just fear that the Kiwis are just too quick.
Well, Grant Warrington, thank you very much for joining us. And we'll watch with interest, and all the best in your future developments and future projects.
Pleasure speaking to you, lads. Anytime.